I'm Lorraine Ballard Morrill. When I was a sophomore in high school, I knew a young man who was the golden boy. He was the president of the junior class. He was a track star, a straight-A student. He took his life, and we never quite understood why he did that. It affected the whole school. We were all in mourning about that, and he continues to haunt me. I often think, why did he do it? Well, suicide is a very serious problem in this country. And what we want to do today is we want to talk to some folks who are going to help us understand suicide and also understand what we as individuals can do to see what the warning signs are, to intervene if we can, and also provide hope for those listening to our voices today who might feel that they're in such a dark, dark place that there is no other alternative, and we want you to know that there is. So joining us in the studio today is Kathy Siciliano. She is a member of the board of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. She lost her son to suicide. We also have with us Dr. Terry Erbacher, who's a school psychologist, and she's with the Delaware County Intermediate Unit at Monsignor Bonner Archbishop Pendergrass High School. And we also have Melissa Ann Hopley, who's a national motivational speaker, mental health advocate, actress, host, and author, and also a survivor of suicide. I want to thank you all for joining us here today, and I'm going to start with you, Dr. Terry Erbacher, and just give us an idea of how serious this problem of suicide is.
Suicide really is what we consider a public health problem. Over 30,000, and the last statistic for 2008 was 36,000 people across the nation die by suicide each year. That's more than almost any other cause. Talking about children specifically, suicide is the third leading cause of death for teenagers and second leading cause of death for college students. Mm. It really has a great impact.
That is so shocking to me. And yet, you kind of can understand it because especially when you are a teenager, you're going through so much emotional turmoil. That's just the nature of being a teen. And teens sometimes don't have, or really not sometimes, they pretty much don't have a sense of the future that they can live into. I just want to turn to you, Kathy Siciliano. You are a survivor. Your son took his life.
Yes, he did. November 24th, 2008.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the circumstances around that?
Well, sometimes there's signs and sometimes, you know, hindsight can be 20/20, where then you look back and some of the most subtle signs. But as Missy has alluded to, sometimes, you know, it's those changes that you see in their personality. And we saw, you know, looking back, we saw some changes, but nothing that was like screaming attention, but more or less subtle things like withdrawing from talking to family, texting more. His involvement with a young lady who he was trying to build that relationship. Now, whether or not that relationship was coming to fruition or not could have played, you know, a part in that. But there was probably some underlining depression that went undiagnosed. You had talked about yourself, you know, the question why. We struggle with that every day, why. The problem is that I don't think we ever really get to answer that question. So when you come to peace with that, that you really don't know why, and start looking for those avenues to help you just come to terms with the loss and help others come to terms with the loss. But then again, also try to reach out to others and let them know that this is not the answer, that you need to actually reach out for help.
We are going to revisit some of the things that you said in just a moment, but I'd like to turn to Melissa Ann Hopley. I sit here, and of course, this is radio, so I'm going to have to describe you. You are just gorgeous.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. And
making me blush.
Yeah, well, you know, you are a beautiful young lady, and yet there was a time when you were in such despair that you actually made an attempt to take your own life. Why?
Growing up, I was very outgoing. I talked a lot, and a lot of people found me annoying in a way, which was fine. You know, I get to talk for a living now, so it's great. But I just always felt like I was trying to please the popular crowd, trying to fit in with the nerds. I was just trying to be everything for everyone. I was very good at sports. I was involved in school, and I did get bullied a little bit. Always smiled at the bullies, high-fived them, because I was, of course, you know, at fault for making fun of others as well. I think when I got into eighth grade, I was diagnosed with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, thinking I'll be cured, I'll be on medication. But it turned out to be the opposite. It was getting worse. People were seeing my behaviors, making fun of me. When I got to high school, I had this guy who just wouldn't leave me alone. I'm trying to fit in, and he's always calling me names and knocking my books down. And, you know, I'd always laugh, and I'm like, maybe he likes me. You know, maybe he thinks I'm cute. But it got to a point one day where, you know, I was living this internal and external life. Externally, I played sports, smiled all the time. Internally, I hated myself. Names, ugly, stupid, annoying. Every day I'd look in the mirror and see people's faces laughing at me. I'd hear my own voices. I'd hear my parents saying they're afraid for my future. At that point, I was diagnosed with depression. At 16, sophomore year, I couldn't take it anymore. One day, I woke up. You wake up and you're like, oh, this day is going to be horrible. I got through the day, you know, almost to the end of the day, and I see this kid and I get the finger. And it was that trigger. It wasn't him. I don't blame him. But everything going on inside that I wasn't taking care of, I wasn't talking in therapy, I wasn't taking my medicine seriously, I didn't have an outlet of any peers that I could talk to. You know, I couldn't talk to my parents. And I didn't have that mentor where I felt, you know, safe. So I was always negatively coping by hurting myself. But it was different this time. The thoughts were, what's the point of living? Why am I here? There's no reason for me to be here. I'm an embarrassment to my friends and family. And I went home and I saw my bedroom window open, and I just thought of how easy it would be to just end the pain and end my life. But I had a peer who recognized, you know, that I was upset, that I was yelling and crying. And instead of just going about her day, she took 5 minutes out of her day to say, are you okay? And smile. And it made me feel like I wasn't alone and I wasn't judged and that somebody cared about me. And that 5 minutes saved my life. And she is my hero today.
Wow. Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And it just goes to show, doesn't it, Dr. Urbacher, how something so simple as someone just saying a word could change the course of somebody's life, maybe allow them to survive. All right, let's talk a bit more about some of the signs. As Melissa kind of explained, and also Kathy, there often are signs. What are some of the signs?
I think what Kathy alluded to, too, is sometimes they're very subtle.
Yes.
So it's sometimes hard to see those signs. But one of the major things to watch out for are any changes in behavior or personality, like Kathy said. And they can be very subtle. You know, someone who used to be active in sports and suddenly withdraws from that, withdrawing from friends, not, you know, caring about school in the way that they used to. Any of those changes. Also, two of the big signs we look out for are that feeling of hopelessness, that feeling that it's never going to get better. And that's where we need to help, you know, people see that it can get better. Missy also alluded to the fact that she wanted the pain to end. And that's just it. Teenagers, you know, most people don't want to die. They want the pain to end. And they're feeling hopeless about it ending on its own. And that's where the treatment is so important, that we can find other ways to help that pain end. Along with that, the last one I'll really mention is really sticking out, is feeling like a burden. Nobody wants to feel like a burden. And when people do start to, that's often associated with this idea of no longer wanting to live.
Right. Kathy, as someone who's a survivor of suicide, your son, we talked about the subtlety. And I think that there are some cases where they're so subtle that the suicide comes as a complete shock.
We were blindsided by it.
Blindsided, yes, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What we need to do, and hindsight again is 2020, is A, take the stigma out of talking about it and take the stigma out of getting the word out to people. And the second thing is like, have conversations with your teenager or your young adult. You know, I think having those conversations with them, how are you feeling? You know, we always ask kids the wrong questions. What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? What are you going to do with your life? These are big questions. These are big mountains that we build for our students and our children to climb, but we don't ask them how they're doing. along the way. And I think we need to change the questions. And I think we need to be more active in knowing how our kids are feeling, how they're dealing with the stresses that society puts on them today, not so much how they're performing.
You know, I wonder whether there are some distinctions between how girls and boys deal with these kinds of issues.
There is. Certainly, males complete suicide about 3 times greater than females. And one of the greatest protective factors out there, protective factor being something that would give someone hope to continue on, is connection. And as we know, females are a lot more about relational connections than males would be. And so that's definitely part of that protective factor. Girls will reach out more often than a male will to get help or even just to talk to a friend about what's going on. For Missy, you know, having a friend reach out, you know, males don't always know how to say that to another friend. Hey, are you okay? Something doesn't seem right, you know, and females are definitely more apt to do that. So statistically, males do complete suicide more often, although females do attempt suicide more often.
Right. Melissa, when you felt the way that you felt mm-hmm. and then your friend came and said whatever it was that kind of, you know, stopped you. What happened after that? What was the follow-up to that? Because so often people have these feelings and they might make an attempt and they might not succeed, but then they might further down the line. What stopped the cycle that was bringing you towards that dark end?
You know, I was always getting help, but at this point I went to a psychiatric hospital. And I was scared. You know, we always think of padded walls and restraints and, you know, people talking to themselves. And I walked in and I looked around and it was young adults just like me who were struggling with an internal and external life because they were afraid of what their peers were going to say, afraid of what their teachers were going to say. And in that hospital, I finally felt like I wasn't alone, like I fit in. But I went back to reality where, you know, there was stigma, there was negative attitudes. People were whispering in my high school that she was in the psych ward. And what kept me going was being in that hospital and just making a promise to these young adults that we were going to fight. You know, we weren't going to give up our lives just because we were different. And then I started realizing that every single person, no matter what, has a story. We're all different. And I knew I had a purpose in the world. It wasn't going to be easy. It wasn't, you know, a click of the finger and I was cured. I had to go through extensive therapy on medication. But when I got to college, you know, I didn't have a hope for my future fully. But I knew that there was some reason why I was here. There was some reason why that girl came out to my room. And I knew my life, my purpose was to help other people realize they're not alone. It doesn't matter, you know, if you have a diagnosis or not, we all go through ups and downs. And I guess at a young age, I was able to see that. And finally, at 19, I was actually able to be myself. And I did things I never imagined, met like all these like awesome people, like celebrities and people just in this cause, because all of a sudden we're talking about something so difficult. And now people are attracted to you more when you thought they were going to be running away from you. So it was just this, you know, aha moment that I can be myself. And yeah, some people may not like me. I can't please everyone. But as long as I have a purpose and I want to help people, you know, but I still struggle today. I mean, every day I struggle with OCD, depression, and do these people like me? Was that speech good? Am I going to be anyone? But I know that every single hump and every single battle in my road of recovery and my road to life is teaching me, is making me go stronger. It's resilience. Every single person in this world is resilient. I believe that. And I believe that's such a word we should spread because, you know, we all go through something and we all get back up. And that's the most important thing is the process of getting back up. We have to realize how strong we are. And that's what I started realizing.
I'm Lorraine Ballard-Morrill. Joining us in the studio today is Kathy Siciliano. She is a member of the board of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. She lost her son to suicide. We also have with us Dr. Terry Urbacher, who's a school psychologist, and she's with the Delaware County Intermediate Unit at Monsignor Bonner Archbishop Pendergrass High School. And we also have Melissa Ann Hopley, who's a national motivational speaker, mental health advocate, actress, host, and author, and also a survivor of suicide. Kathy, when you are the parent of a child who takes their life, I have to say that as a parent, I feel your pain because that's the greatest fear that any parent has, is losing their child. And then losing their child to suicide has to have an extra layer of emotion attached to it. Tell us how you as a family are able to move forward.
Okay, well, the first thing is that, you know, that again, that very first question, why? And people tend to almost put their relationship under a magnifying glass. Where did I go wrong? What did I do wrong? But then I just started to reflect that I can't take that moment and let it define my relationship and my life with him. And so when I first realized that, I was able to move past that why. Because I know, and every other parent out there should know, that we don't wake up every day and try to think how we can make the worst of our children's lives. We're always striving to make their lives better, to help them, you know, conquer things in life that they need to conquer, get over those humps and those hurdles. So my very first thing was realizing that I could not let that one moment define my relationship with my son. And that, you know, he hit it very well. In a lot of the books that I've read and the research that I've looked at, they're very good actors and actresses. And like Missy said, there's that one part of her that was participating, but then there was that hidden. And so as a parent, I wasn't able to see that hidden pain that he had. So that's why I encourage other parents to kind of have conversations, especially with males, try to get them to connect and let them know that it's okay to share their feelings. As a family, we're very active in AFSP. My sons, Paul, and my son, Giovanni, and my husband, Aldo, we do a lot of work with AFSP. My son, Giovanni, actually is the groundbreaker on, and this will be our third annual masquerade ball. Anthony loved Halloween, and he always liked women to be able to dress respectively for Halloween. So we have a formal event. It's the masquerade ball. It'll be held October 20th. And we're looking at the Crown Plaza in King of Prussia as our venue. And all the proceeds go to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention so we can bring programs and training. The other piece is the mural. We were painting the Philadelphia Mural Arts Program is now hosting the Finding the Light Within. And there will be a lot of people painting. This will be our first permanent billboard for AFSP. It will have the 1-800-TALK number. So by getting involved in helping to get the word out, I also started my own Survivors of Suicide support group. I reached out with the Catholic faith and I facilitate Life Resurrected, which is a faith-based support group for survivors of suicide, but anyone can come. So getting involved and helping, it helps to heal that pain, but it also helps to be there for other people who are just starting that journey through this tragedy, is to be able to walk, and even if it's just a few steps with them along that path, to help them know that, you know, we have to heal, but we also have to lift each other up.
May I say something with that?
Yes, please.
Definitely the whole getting involved thing is so important. It's a serious topic, but we also want to try to make it fun. We want to try to make it entertaining and in terms of the events. Like, I know a lot of young adults are like, oh, you know, that's really sad. I don't know if I want to go to an event about that. But I'm like, it's about celebration. We're celebrating life. We have to celebrate the joys because we want to give people inspiration. We want to give people hope. And Kathy is amazing. She does so much and she makes it fun. We're just trying to inspire others and show them the light that it can get better. I'm telling you right now, if you're listening out there, that it can get better and it will get better. There will be ups and downs, but you are strong and you are resilient. And I know that there's so much support. And if you feel like you don't have any, call someone at AFSP, call someone at the hotline. There's always somebody out there that does care. I promise.
Terry, I wonder if you could tell us what some of the resources are that are available for people who are not only survivors, but folks who are in crisis.
Yeah, there's many resources out there. I just wanted to hit on one other thing Kathy had said too,
yeah,
is about the idea of education and the fact that most parents don't know when their children are suffering. And we call it suffering in silence, you know, with depression. Most are not aware because who do teenagers or young adults talk to?
Not their parents.
Not their parents. Exactly.
No.
So the idea of educating is so important, you know, educating teachers and staff, but also educating children and teenagers, what the warning signs are to them, so that if they see a peer, as in Missy's case, struggling, they know where in school or at home to refer each other. And that's the most important thing, making sure they know what to do, because they're well aware of each other's behavior, especially now with social media, well before us adults are aware.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point. And I actually wanted to ask you about that. With this social media world that we live in, it has its advantages, obviously, because certainly we can be aware and catch signs through social media. But social media also has been the reason why people are put in this very dark place, because it's another avenue where people can be bullied and hurt and have, you know, such ugly things said about them. And I wonder if you could speak to that. I wonder if you feel as though social media has contributed to the suicide rate.
Yeah, social media is really complex for us working with teenagers. Like you said, there are benefits. But you talk about bullying. I think back to schoolyard bullying. At 3 o'clock, that ended, and children could go home to a safe place. Now it's constant. That bullying never ends because they all have their handheld devices, and it's streaming in constantly. So it's really tough. Now, research shows, you know, bullying or on social media or bullying in general doesn't cause suicidal ideation. But for a child who is already depressed or perhaps suicidal, it definitely exacerbates it. And that's the concern. Those are also the children who are more susceptible to being bullied, the ones who are maybe already depressed or, you know, withdrawn. So it really is. It's really challenging. You know, one of the things we're trying to do is also, again, with education, teach children that if they see something on there that's a warning sign, to let the adults know. Facebook has recently created, you could always report abuse on Facebook. Now you can also report suicidal intent.
Yeah.
So if someone has written something on there that appears, you know, questionable with regard to suicide or depression, they can report that and the police get involved.
Right.
Which is a wonderful, you know, progress.
Yeah.
So we're happy for that.
And then what are the hotline numbers that people can call?
Yeah, the big one is 800-273-TALK. And, or 1-800-SUICIDE. It's hard for some kids, especially with social media. We're seeing they don't reach out, that talking can be more difficult. So this allows them a place to talk, you know, sort of anonymously. 1-800-273-TALK is our number one. There's also a lot of web-based information out there. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, our website is afsp.org. In Delaware County, delcosuicidepreventionorg. Has a lot of resources and information. There's also the Association for American Association for Suicidology, and that is www.suicidology.org. Again, there's tons of information. Kathy mentioned support groups.
Yes.
Talking about individuals who have lost loved ones to suicide, we have what we call survivors of suicide support groups. And those you can find through the AFSP.org website also. And they're all through the five county areas and southern Jersey locally.
And Kathy, you mentioned you have a support group. If people wanted to get in touch with your group, how can they do that?
It's actually listed on the AFSP.org website under Survivors of Suicide Support Groups. And they can look by state, and then it'll give all the different counties located in the Northeast Philadelphia area.
There's an event that's coming up in October. Tell us about it.
Okay. This is our Out of the Darkness Walk. It is held at the Art Museum. We walk down Kelly Drive. It's the AFSP Out of the Darkness Walk. We encourage everyone to go online at www.afsp.org, click on Community Walks, and then you can scroll down to state, and you can see the many different walks that go across the state of Pennsylvania in support of suicide prevention and awareness. So we want to welcome everyone to come down. It is a walk that there is no minimal amount for you to walk. You can come down and support maybe someone who has lost someone to suicide, or if you know someone who had contemplated taking their life. This is an opportunity for you to come out and really show support for this cause. This walk in the past 3 years has doubled and tripled to almost 1,500 walkers. We want to see that number double again. So we need to bring about awareness and prevention, and we do this by getting the word out. There was one particular team, their t-shirt sticks in my mind all the time, stigma sucks and support saves. So we need to move forward with that.
How do you register?
Go online at www.afsp.org, click on Community Walks. You can join one of the already teams created there, or you can create your own team and walk.
And Melissa, you travel around the country and you speak. How do people get in touch with you?
they can actually find me on Facebook if they like. I'm also on Twitter. I speak for a couple organizations. One's Minding Your Mind. If you go on mindingyourmind.org, they actually have a free program where I can go into schools and speak. And it's not, you know, all serious. You know, we have fun, we joke, we laugh, but we get down to business. And
you dance.
And we dance. We dance sometimes. I just started singing. People try to get me to sing. Not happening yet. I said, give me 6 months and we'll see. But yeah, it's really cool because I have so many young adults that just reach out to me on Facebook. I have like 5,000 friends on Facebook and followers on Twitter. And, you know, they're just writing messages. I feel like I'm not alone. You know, thank you so much. You know, I feel like I have this inspiration and hope, and that's all I want. I just want to spread hope around. I know AFSP also has a program where they go into schools and they speak and talk about the warning signs, and they have a More Than Sad video, which shows the symptoms and signs. So I'd love to speak in any school. It's a free program. Call me up, hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, anything. I would be glad to come in and definitely connect with you guys. So,
you know, I read somewhere there was a study done, and maybe you all can correct me if I get all the details wrong, but it was a study of suicide attempts. These suicide attempts had occurred when I believe they jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. And in the cases where the suicide attempt failed and the suicide, the person committing suicide attempting it lived, they found that without exception, they felt regret as they were hurtling down towards the water. And I think that's an incredibly powerful statement, because no matter what, that person got to that point where they were on the bridge, they jumped off the bridge, they fully intended to die. But in the course of falling, they had second thoughts, they had regrets. So that has to tell you something. And so often, the people who are making those attempts don't really see past what they're feeling at that moment. Kathy, you wanted to say something.
I do. And again, that's where education comes in really strong, in letting kids know that they really need to reach out for help. And Missy had mentioned the More Than Sad. I actually had an opportunity last month to travel to Washington, D.C., where we had our national advocacy program. And we actually met with senators and congressmen from the state of Pennsylvania. And we brought together some issues in legislature that we're trying to push through. And one of them, Senator Bob Casey has actually brought forth, was mandatory training for teachers and educators every 2 years in pre and post suicide intervention. And so I'm looking at this More Than Sad program. I'm looking at school budgets. And here is AFSP, who's willing to give this out to any school district willing to participate in the program. The curriculum's already there. One of my pie in the sky, I would say, challenges for this year is to actually get PDE to look at this program, approve it as curriculum, so that AFSP can put it out to all the different school districts.
PDE stands for Philadelphia.
Pennsylvania Department of Education.
Okay.
So that would be across the state.
Yeah.
And so I do believe that if Anthony had been able to think 1 minute past that moment, he'd still be here. So education is key. I don't think we're ever going to be able to eradicate it, but we need to let kids know and people know that there is hope, that they need to be able to reach out. I look at the symbol for the suicide prevention, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and it's a life preserver. And so whether you're a survivor who's lost someone to suicide or someone who is in that dark place, you need to know what that life preserver is, and you need to be able to reach out for that. Nothing portrays it more than the mural that's being painted and will be put at 31st and Chestnut on the Horizon House. 150 feet long, 45 feet tall, and there is a life preserver in that. So that's the message, is letting people know what is that life preserver that they need to reach out for.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, I'm going to give you the last word.
The last word would be, you know, if you are struggling, it's okay to talk to somebody. It's okay to reach out to somebody. If you are a friend who sees their friend struggling, they said, I don't eat or I don't feel like there's a point of me being here. As that friend, encourage them to go to the counselor, go with them. If not, go yourself. Because if Mary Beth did not, for that second, go to my mom and say, your daughter needs help, I don't know if I'd be here. If you're judging, bullying others, take a step back. Realize we all have a story. Realize that we all go through things. And instead of spreading the negative around, we can spread so much positive. It can become a domino effect and can save so many lives, and we don't even realize it. So just know it can get better, and always know that we have one thing in common. We all have a story. We're all different. It makes us unique, and there is always hope.
I love that. We end with the word hope. And Melissa Ann Hopley, ironically named,
yes,
or maybe appropriately named, motivational speaker for the mental health advocate, an actress, host, author, and a wonderful speaker, eloquent about how you can move from a very dark place into the light. And we also had a chance to speak with Dr. Terry Erbacher, school psychologist for the Delaware County Intermediate Unit at Monsignor Bonner Archbishop Prendergast High Schools. And finally, Kathy Siciliano, who is on the board of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. She has a support group. She is a survivor. Her son is someone who took his life, but she has taken that tragedy and is doing everything that she can do to make sure that that doesn't happen to other families. I want to thank you all for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Lorraine Ballard-Morrill.